Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, the middle show of the week, and that's when we turn the page to the Packers' upcoming opponent, and that will be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Sunday at Lambeau Field. And as we break down Tampa Bay here on both offense and defense, starting with the offensive side of the ball, the big news is that it sounds like former first-round draft pick Jameis Winston, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback, is going to be coming back, getting back into action after missing a few weeks, kind of resting what had been a troublesome shoulder.
Yeah, so if he's back in the equation, certainly the cornerstone of that offense, if you watched Hard Knocks this year, you know, they had big expectations for him and this offense this season. I mean, they had playoff aspirations, division championship aspirations, and hasn't played out that way. They actually got off, I thought, Mike, to a really solid start this year.
Yeah.
They're still third in the league right now in passing offense, but they hit that week four, week five stretch right around then, and it was kind of the wheels sort of fell off a little bit. So they're still trying to find themselves. They're trying to compose themselves. If they get Winston back, although Ryan Fitzpatrick has been okay,
yeah,
I think it's going to be mentally a big boost for them.
Well, I think we saw earlier in the season this Tampa Bay team, and we'll talk about their defense in the next segment, which I think has really been more the downfall of this team. But offensively, this team was scoring some points early on in the season, even though sometimes it wasn't translating to victories. But you have to believe that when Winston's shoulder started to bother him, he was obviously playing through it for a stretch of games before they decided to shut him down for a while and rest him. That seemed to coincide a little bit with the offensive production dropping off. Because you look at the weapons this team has in the passing game. Boy, I mean, you're talking Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, these two tight ends, Cameron Brait and O.J. Howard. Actually, they're both pretty young tight ends, you know, up-and-coming players in this league. These guys can make some plays in the passing game.
Well, and one reason they brought in DeSean Jackson this offseason, they felt like he was going to be the missing piece there for him. They like Mike Evans. He's a Pro Bowl, top flight, top of the line receiver in this league, but they were looking for a compliment to him. And then same thing with them drafting O.J. Howard. They're looking to build those tools around Jameis Winston. But again, the thing that has kind of, I think, sort of hurt them is the fact that while they are third in passing offense, they've had no run game this season.
Right.
Doug Martin was suspended at the beginning of the season. Even when he came back, he's still only averaging 3.2 yards per carry right now. Jacquez Rogers is there under that mark. Peyton Barber, Charles Sims is more of a receiving type back. They just haven't had anybody out of the backfield step up. So that one dimensionality, I think, has been the thing that sort of hurt them this year with defense is now really keying in on playing back with too high.
Yeah, they were planning on having Martin and Rogers, that combination, you know, kind of a power back and
right,
scat back type, not to put too many stereotypes on it. But that's what they looked like heading in, and I think they expected that 1-2 punch in the backfield to really be a complement to the passing game with these weapons, the tight ends and the wide receivers that we talked about. And it just hasn't worked out that way because the production has not been there
right
for the running game. You mentioned 3.2 yards a carry for Doug Martin. Kind of their entire rushing offense, whoever's been carrying the ball, they've kind of been wallowing around 3.0 yards per carry all season long. And that's just not going to get it done. And then when you throw the shoulder injury into the mix with Winston, who you know, I thought he was really looking like an up-and-coming quarterback last year at the end of the season, because this Tampa Bay team was kind of right on the fringe, you know, in the playoff hunt for a wild card spot, you know, into the last couple weeks of the season last year. And they came up just a little bit short. But then it just hasn't quite come together for them in 2017.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you are the smarter one of the two people on this show. I believe the Packers were they the team that ended up shutting the door on the Buccaneers' playoff chances last year? Or was it I forgot what it was. There was something, like, basically there was a roundabout way they could have made the playoffs at the end of last season, and then that door got shut.
And I think, there was a game, if I'm not mistaken, I believe there was a game against New Orleans that they had to win, and I believe they fell short against the Saints. And then that was when, you know, as you say, the door kind of closed on them. But they were in the playoff hunt all the way up through Christmas.
Yeah, and the point I want to make branching off of that is this Tampa Bay team reminds me a lot of the Jaguars from last year. And I don't say that just because of the Florida affiliation there. It's that game against the Patriots. I remember I watched that entire game in week four. Really tight, really tightly contested. Winston actually had a chance to lead a game-winning drive at the end of the game. They just couldn't get it done.
Yep.
It seemed like mentally that was a tough hurdle for them to get over. From there, that's what started that five-game losing streak. And then also with the Hurricane at the beginning of the season, they ended up having that week one bye
right.
with the Miami Dolphins. So things just did not go their way this season. But now, you know, they got two wins over the Jets and Dolphins. They did lose to the Falcons. They're looking to still build some momentum because Dirk Koetter wants to show that he still is the guy for this job and can get them where they want to go.
Yeah, and I think the biggest area that they need to look at improvement down the stretch here is on the defensive side of the ball, and we'll get to that after the break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford in this chair, Wes Hodkiewicz in that one. And Wes, the defensive side of the ball for the Buccaneers, in my opinion, has been the surprise in terms of the struggles. Because as we mentioned towards the end of last season, I thought this was a team I pegged for 2017 to be a sleeper in the NFC playoff race. You weren't alone. I was obviously wrong. I missed on it, and I think the surprising part of it to me has been the regression of their defense, which I thought was really coming on last season, and it helped them with a young quarterback like Winston. It helped them to stay in the hunt last year, playing some good defense. But this year, last in the league in passing defense, they have only 15 sacks in 11 games, which is a very, very low total. Opposing quarterbacks have put a cumulative passer rating of 98.7 on the board, almost a triple-digit number. You just don't see that very often, and certainly, you know, I know the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are far removed from the Tony Dungy days, but when you think about the heyday of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you think about defense, and this defense just doesn't resemble that in any way.
Yeah, not only the last ranked overall defense now, too. They've kind of been, you know, there with the Giants as of late, but the Giants, you know, holding the Washington in check for the most part a week ago. So now the Buccaneers are in that spot. The weapons are there. That's the thing. I mean, when I look at the depth chart, when I look at where they're at, I mean, Gerald McCoy is as good as defensive tackles get in this league.
Yep.
If you want, I mean, Brent Grimes has been doing this thing forever. I mean, I remember talking to Joe Witt about him in the past. That's one of Witt's prized pupils. He worked with them, I think, was it like 2008 in Atlanta? So I don't know exactly. I don't know enough about the Buccaneers to tell you exactly what has gone wrong or what's gone awry for them this season. The one thing that stands out to me, they are a pretty old defense. They don't have a lot of young guns out there. For the most part, a lot of free agent signings. It's tough. And then them losing Vernon Hargroves the last 3 weeks to that hamstring injury, also something that's hurt them at the cornerback position as well.
Yeah, you mentioned Gerald McCoy in the middle of that defensive line. This is a guy who can be as disruptive as any player out there. And I'm just surprised that, you know, when you look at things statistically, that that with a guy that good, and I'm not saying that McCoy would rack up a bunch of sacks, but when you have a guy who's that powerful and that disruptive in the middle of a defensive line, that as a whole, your defense is barely averaging one sack per game.
Right.
That just stuns me.
Yeah, and that's the thing that hurts you, too. Think of McCoy. We talked so much, made that comparison back in week three between Mike Daniels, you know, and potentially having that matchup against Geno Atkins, and then Daniels ends up being hurt and misses it. McCoy's very much out of that same mold, you know, kind of a sawed-off pass rusher, an undersized guy, but really wins the leverage battles and can get in the backfield and cause disruption. Great from that perspective, but if you're the Buccaneers, you don't want to see him as your leading sacker. Like Mike Daniels, you know, he's going to get you 4, 5, 6 sacks a season, and that's great production for what they're asking out of him in this scheme.
Yeah.
But you need to get outside pressure from your edge rushers. That's something that Tampa Bay has missed this year. When you talk about some of those pass rushing stats, pass defense stats, I think there are direct correlations there to not being able to get pressure on the quarterback in some of the damage that quarterbacks have been able to do against that secondary.
Yeah, and when you look at where this season kind of went south on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, as I said, there were some games there where the offense was putting up points. They lost a couple of ball games where they scored 27, scored 30 points. You've got it up on the screen there. It was the Buffalo Bills and Arizona Cardinals. their offense scored plenty, and and the defense really let them down. And that's where the things started to go south as they hit a 5-game losing streak there that really kind of knocked them out of contention a lot earlier. And certainly with the way the rest of the NFC South is playing, that factored into it as well. But the Buccaneers were kind of knocked out of this thing a lot earlier than people thought.
Yeah, and that's why I used in the last segment about that comparison with the Patriots, because they were 2-1 at that point. You beat the Patriots, you're 3-1, you're feeling good about where you're at. Instead,
and they held the Patriots under 20 points, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it
production
amazing.
Was minimal.
Yeah.
And then you look at the Cardinals getting punched in the mouth there. Buffalo, who I think has still been a lot better than a lot of people thought, but still, you know, not a world burner right now in this league. And then they just didn't do anything against the Panthers. So with all those things together, I think things kind of got away from them a little bit. The big key for them, I mean, if I'm Dirk Cutter and I'm the coaching staff going into this, is you got to find a way to stop the bleeding here, because it doesn't get much easier after Green Bay with the Lions on the schedule, the Falcons, Panthers, and then the Saints.
Yeah,
a lot of division
with
contests.
All their division opponents.
Yeah. So, I mean, while it's strange, they're 4-7. Playoffs do not look imminent at this point. They need to find a way to get on the right side of this thing. It's a really big, important game, I think, for both of these squads for different reasons. But I think that's the thing that really stands out to me the most when I look at this matchup, is just both of these teams trying to build some momentum for the stretch run.
Yeah, getting back to the offense quickly, I want to throw this question at you. Yeah. With the issue of Jameis Winston, he's missed a few games. He was playing hurt before. Do you think we'll see a rested Jameis Winston or a rusty one on Sunday at Lambeau Field? How does he come out and play? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike, just because of this, you know, you really don't know with him. I think this has been the longest amount of time he's missed so far in his NFL career. But he does have that relationship with Evans. You know, he's worked with Doug Martin. You know, it seemed like for the most part he was building a rapport there with DeSean Jackson. So to be honest with you, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't really know either.
From that perspective, though, if you are the Buccaneers, he's your franchise quarterback.
Yep.
So I think no matter what happens here, you got to get him on the field. You have to get some more development behind him, because both him and Marcus Mariota have sort of taken their lumps a little bit this year, those two top draft picks from a few years back. For the Buccaneers' perspective, Ryan Fitzpatrick, what he's done is kept the ship afloat, you know, so to speak. But you need to find out what you have in Winston, and you have to try to develop it. So I don't know what Jameis Winston we're going to see, but if he's healthy and ready to go, we're going to see him.
Yeah, that's definitely true. With that, we're going to toss it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. And Wes, shifting gears here to the Green Bay Packers on the defensive side of the ball. An issue that we've talked about off and on throughout the season, and it came up again with regards to the Pittsburgh game and in the follow-up press conferences with the coaches on Monday. And Packers had a bad tackling game defensively in Pittsburgh. I believe the number that was thrown out was 16 missed tackles on defense, which was a season high. And I remember coming back from the game in Atlanta in week two, that was a big issue with the Packers having tackling problems, and they seem to have shored it up. It's not something that we've talked about a whole lot since then. But one of those things, you know, it's a fundamental thing, and every once in a while it rears its ugly head, so to speak, and it, you know, the missed tackles really cost Green Bay Sunday night in Pittsburgh.
Both sides, offense and defense, there were things they could have done better to come out of there with the victory. I've talked earlier this week about the offense converting when the Packers got the takeaways, turning those into points. As you said, when you get three takeaways, you want to get more than 7 points. Defensively, you had the three takeaways. You controlled the tempo of the game in the first half. But then the missed tackles are the thing, I think, that ultimately caused them the most problems. Even the ones that didn't necessarily give up first downs or explosive plays, but chunk yardage, were something I thought really hurt them. And Mike McCarthy, Dom Capers, they didn't mince their words. You know, McCarthy said right off the bat on Monday, minus 10 in that category just isn't going to cut it. Dom Capers also saying that he believes that that was the most missed tackles defensively they've had all season. It's weird because you want to be able to say, hey, you got to correct it, got to, you know, clean it up, and go from there. But it's such an instantaneous thing. It comes down to your fundamentals. It comes down to breaking down, doing what you need to do to stay in front of your opponent and get him to the ground. So there's so many different factors that go into that. It's easy to say you want to clean it up, but the Packers, that's going to be the biggest challenge, I think, in this game. They got the takeaways, which they didn't get the week before against Baltimore, But now you have to get the guys down when they are catching the football or carrying the football.
Yeah, and I know the fans get frustrated when they hear the coaches talk about, well, we've got to get back to fundamentals. We've got to focus on it. Because from the fans' perspective, it's like, hey, these guys are professional football players. Yeah. Don't they know all the fundamentals? And it's a reminder that if you don't continue to harp on it and work on it, all it takes is a little bit of a slip in fundamentals, yeah. And then suddenly Le'Veon Bell is breaking 7 or 8 tackles in one game. And excuse me, as I said in Insider Inbox, he wouldn't be Le'Veon Bell if the first guy brought him down every time. He's right. Going to break some tackles, but 16 total for the defense in one game. You know, you're looking at you'd like to at least be able to cut that number in half, because I think. And I know there were a lot of issues with the pass rush. The Packers weren't blitzing much because they needed the safety help on Antonio Brown, all of that kind of stuff. The four-man rush was not getting home. Ben Roethlisberger had a lot of time.
Yeah.
But I still think the Packers defensively could have survived the lack of a pass rush better if they had tackled better. I really think the missed tackles were a huge problem against the Steelers.
Yeah, and the thing that stands out to me the most, Mike, it's I'm not going to sit here and say it's easy to tackle somebody in space. It's not.
Right.
These are world-class athletes, but you have to find a way to slow them down. And that's why the Packers always talk about that pursuit and finish, you know, rallying to the football, you know, getting multiple guys on offensive players. So, you know, I think a guy that's done a really good job of this year, and it's one of the reasons why he's leading the team in tackles and fourth in the NFL, is Blake Martinez. Because he can get on guys, and even if he isn't taking them down solo, he holds them up long enough to get his help. The thing you want to avoid is where you're just getting your ankles broken and guys are turning upfield, because that doesn't slow them down at all. It just gives them that extra charge of steam going into the second level, and that's where you get into a problem area. So for the Packers, I think that's really the biggest thing. They've shown they can tackle well this season. The consistency side of it, making sure that guys don't leak into open spaces and find ways to get past that first would-be tackler, is really where this starts. Because if you can at least slow them down, that's where you're going to be able to get your guys rallying around you.
Yeah, and based on what we've seen this season and coming off of a game like this, I would expect to see a much sharper tackling game for the Packers at Lambeau Field on Sunday. Because after the Atlanta game, the Cincinnati game in Week 3 the following week, I thought the Packers had one of their better tackling games. I don't know what the missed tackle number was in that one, but when it becomes an emphasis, then usually it gets fixed, and that's how this game works. So,
yeah, absolutely.
But before we go to a break, we'll take care of a little sponsor business here. Attention, Packers fans! We're calling you to fill up with Campbell's Chunky Chicken Noodle Soup. We're talking delicious, hearty soup packaged in an exclusive Packers Superfan can. These cans are limited edition for all you football fanatics out there, so don't miss out. Go on, huddle up, and fill up with this hearty soup, Chunky Soup, the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, before we go today, I think it's worth talking about what appears to be the beginning of the end of an era for a certain quarterback in the NFL, and that's the New York Giants, Eli Manning. A surprise announcement coming out this week that he will not be starting. The Giants turning over the quarterback position to Geno Smith, and this ends, or will end, a consecutive game streak of 210 for Eli Manning, the longest current one by a quarterback in the NFL and the second longest one all time behind, obviously, Brett Favre. What are your thoughts on this and what the Giants are doing here?
Yeah, I'm probably with the rest of, I think, everybody. it definitely raised my eyebrows and made me somewhat curious about exactly what the thinking is there. Before I go into anything, I want to mention Ben McAdoo is as classy as they come in terms of coaches and my experience with him here in Green Bay.
Yep, me too.
Always a forward person, very honest, and I think, you know, his credibility goes without saying. That being said, this one kind of shocked me a little bit, because the first thing that happened when I was made aware of this, Matt Haberkamp in our digital department back there said to me, "Is Eli Manning hurt?" And I wasn't aware of that. I didn't hear anything. Usually with his streak, if he's hurt, that would have been national. Somebody would have mentioned it.
Yeah.
I would have seen it somewhere.
For sure.
And then within probably 2 minutes of that, then I hear all the reports coming out, the statement that the Giants released. My thought on it is that this is a lost season for the Giants. They're 2-9. They do not have a Patrick Mahomes. They don't have, even a Jimmy Garoppolo, somebody that's waiting in the wings that is seen as the future right. at that position. They have Geno Smith, and nothing against Geno Smith, but, you know, he's on his second team. He's 5 years into the league at this point. My feeling is that Eli Manning, whatever you want to make the case of his Hall of Fame candidacy or what his legacy is going to be, he's a two-time Super Bowl MVP quarterback that led the Giants to the promised land, the goal that everybody strives for. I think you have to show him a little bit more respect than that. This isn't just some guy that you signed. This isn't, take for instance, just name any quarterback, a Josh McCown, rent-a-veteran type quarterback. This is a guy that started 210 straight games. So to see the streak end that way, if that ends up being what plays out on Sunday, I think that's a real shame. Because those type of things, those Ironman distinctions in this game and what that means, what you're playing through, what kind of leadership you're showing, I don't think you can take that lightly.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I understand that this season has not gone well for the Giants. Eli Manning hasn't played as well as he would have liked. But we all know this was an 11-5 team last year. Eli Manning won plenty of games for this team just a year ago. And I hate to see these kinds of things end as well, in my opinion, because there's no reason for it really, other than the fact that, you know, the Giants, I guess, are thinking they want to get the highest draft pick possible to get their quarterback of the future. And move on from Manning. I don't know how else to look at it.
But I want to make this point too, Mike. The Packers went 4-12 in 2005. Brett Favre threw 29 interceptions. What kind of travesty would that have been if they set him down during a 4-12 season, which they had no hope?
Right.
That would have been unacceptable to see what his career was and how he had that resurgence.
That's a really good point.
I just think, and they had the backup quarterback of the future at that point, and they didn't do it, so it's interesting.
Yeah, it definitely is. But we've got to call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.